It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley are here. The Microsoft quarterly results are in, and a big surprise. We'll have that in all the Windows news coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 320, recorded July 18th, 2013. Biggity bong binged it. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Shutterstock.com with over 26 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips. Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 30% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use the offer code Windows7. It's time for Windows Weekly. Yes, it is. Yes, indeed. Yes, my friends, yes. The show that covers everything having to do with Microsoft, including Windows Phone, because Paul Thurrott is the king of Windows Phone. Windows 8, Windows 8.1, Azure, because Mary Jo is the queen of Azure and Hadoop. Xbox. Mary Jo is a big Xbox fan, we all know.
Huge.
Paul Thurrott's here, the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com. Mary Jo Foley from allaboutmicrosoft.com, the ZDNet blog, and we, these, between Paul and Mary Jo, they got it covered. When it comes to Microsoft, you guys are the best in the bids. In fact, you know, it's funny, even on TWiT, like, we frequently quote you as if you're a source.
Yeah. Well, we are.
you're like the source. It's great. So,
I get to make funny graphics.
Oh, do you have some? I have to just look at your site. I haven't seen your site.
You see my today. Halo guy holding the copy of Office 365 today.
Yes, no,
it's funny. Good. Like I probably spend like 60 plus hours a week writing, and yet it's like the little Photoshop jobs that for some reason give me the greatest amounts of pleasure.
So you do that stuff? You get to do that? Have fun. You know, I think I noticed that All Things D is starting to take a, and, you know, they used to just use images, stock images, and now they've started doing a little photoshopping too. So I think they're saying, you know, that Thurrott's eating us alive.
Yeah, that's
he's eating us alive. Fear the Thurrott. So, and we should mention that it's coming up at the end of September at Mandalay Bay, Las Vegas, actually early October for the IT Dev Connections, September 30th through October 4th. And when you go to see the Halo guy holding the Office 365 manual. You might as well
should
sign
have him
up
holding
for that.
A copy of my book. I screwed
this
one
up.
Yeah,
what are you thinking?
Yeah.
Come see you Paul should. And Mary Jo in person. And I think, I haven't talked to anybody in power, but I'm pretty sure we're going to do a live Windows Weekly from that show as well.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah, so that all is excitement plus. Meanwhile, Nokia has announced its quarterly earnings, and you say good news and bad news. What's the good news?
Let's do the good news.
Good news, and then Paul, because he's such a cheerful fellow, can do the bad.
Actually, see, I was defending this on Twitter, and it's like all these people are really down on Nokia today. I think they're doing fine, but please continue.
I mean, we can do the good news pretty quick. They're losing less money. Yay.
Well, wait a minute. See, that was like I did it.
It was.
I could have done
it. No, if you did it, you would have gone, yay.
Yay.
That'd be the only difference.
They're selling more phones.
They're selling more Lumias and Windows phones, right?
In Russia, Windows Phone is tops.
It is. And India, too. And there's a whole handful of
Russia, Windows Phone buys
sells
you.
Yeah. This because no major carrier in Russia will carry the iPhone. But
Who cares? You
who cares? Doesn't matter why. No. And there is a brisk gray market for iPhones. But Windows Phone is tops.
Right.
With like 10% of the market almost.
Yeah. And then the other good news was there were more Lumias sold in this quarter by Nokia than all BlackBerry phones. phones. So,
oh, that's sad.
Come on, we're trying to get any little good news. Oh, we can.
That is a backhanded compliment if ever there was one.
No, no, no. I think that's an important milestone because they are now number three, and we can kind of make jokes about it. But they are upselling. That's fair. And by the way, you know, RIM just launched a new platform today. This year, and Windows Phone 8 is significantly outselling.
But is this really because Windows Phone 8 is doing so well or because BlackBerry is doing so crappy?
It's a little bit of both, Leo.
That's why it's a, you know, if you said, oh, hey, we went toe-to-toe against BlackBerry and we beat him in the marketplace, that would be one thing, but it's not really.
Microsoft beat Netscape in the 1990s. Was it because IE was better than Netscape or was it because Netscape screwed up?
But that was a fair head-to-head competition. They beat.
A little bit of both.
But they beat them. They gave it away for free is how they beat them.
Okay, but
if you start giving away Windows Phone, hey, there's a strategy.
By the way, that's an excellent idea, and I'd like to pursue that one. But things are rarely black and white. I mean, it is nuanced. I mean, you know, they sold almost twice as many Lumia handsets in this quarter as they did in the same quarter a year ago. That's amazing.
Doubling is good.
Yep. You know, that's amazing. They sold significantly. I think the number. I don't remember the exact number, but the. Significantly more phones this quarter than they did in the previous quarter, you know, 5.6 to 7.8. And they predicted that they will sell more again in the current quarter. So it's on the right trajectory.
The trend is your friend.
It is.
Yep.
And it's good to see the upward trend because, as we Windows Phone users know, it hasn't been upward lately pretty much since they launched Windows Phone.
Right.
So, yeah, we're happy. We're happy that it's gaining traction and that Nokia is doing well since that's the biggest by far of all the Windows Phone platforms. So that's good.
And there is no question that Nokia is now seen as a cutting edge phone, which is also a good. I think the Lumia 1020, you could argue that the 925 and the 920 before it were certainly very competitive phones, but the 1020 now leaps them ahead in many
different kind of thing.
Yeah.
In fact, I would go even a step further and say that the big change that's occurred this year is that they went from having a reasonably well-rounded lineup of phones to having a pretty incredible collection of phones at various price points, including a phone that you can buy for as little as $130 without a contract, which is an amazing device for that price. All the way up to the craziest phone camera thing ever made. I mean, you know, with a 41 megapixel camera and all of that stuff. I mean, it is, and everything in between, you know, depending on where you live, which country you live, you obviously have a slightly different selection and depending on your carrier. But and there are exceptions, you know, Sprint isn't exactly great right now. But I would say across the board, for the most part, you have a pretty amazing selection of Lumia devices now, which was not the case a year ago. It definitely was not the case a year ago.
Not the case.
So to me, this is all great news. And, of course, more to come. You know, they kind of hinted at the 1020 event that there would be future product launches coming soon as well.
And there we go. You got it in a nutshell.
If you expected me to leap in and save you guys, I'm not going to. I'm just going to let him do.
I've written a book for you people.
Actually, before the show, Paul admitted something very important to us, which is that he's sitting looking at the last page. He's practically ready to type the end on the typewriter.
You know what's awful about it? So it's not the last page literally in the book. It's the last page I'm going to write. So it's actually close to the beginning of the book.
Oh, interesting.
Actually, that's not even fair to you. I do have to write a short introduction as well, but it is the most boring, awful topic that I could not care less about.
You put it off, didn't you?
I just have to.
You put it off.
Just, you know.
What is it? What's the most boring? What is it?
I don't want to say.
Let's think. What could it be, Mary Jo? What could be the most boring thing you could write about a phone?
Basic information.
How to use the dialer.
Yeah, no, I wrote that a long time ago. That's way more interesting than what I'm writing now.
Look at this feed. That's boring. Whatever it is, that's boring.
I'm just tired of writing about this kind of stuff.
Paul writes books like David Lean makes movies. He doesn't do it in order.
Okay, I had to think about that one for
I wonder second. If anybody right. does it in order. That's kind of an interesting question. Don't you always do the easy part?
You know? Sometimes you're in the mood.
I wrote my books in order pretty much. But they were almanacs, so they were. It was chronological. The book was actually chronological, you know.
There are huge problems not doing it in order. You write things differently for one thing, but you have to constantly assume you are going to reference things that you say you're going to, right?
Yes.
So in the early days, I used to have all these kind of notes to myself, like,
don't forget.
Don't forget that you mentioned you were going to do this.
CF page XXX. As we mentioned in page XXX.
Yeah, you didn't do that. You didn't do that.
Yeah, I didn't write my book in sequence either. I picked the parts that were easiest first left out the hard parts till the end, which is a mistake.
Gina Trapani wrote an article paraphrasing Mark Twain. He says, if you eat a frog for breakfast in the morning, then you can safely say that the worst is over. Start with this tough
Depends
stuff.
On how you cook the frog, actually.
Frog's legs for breakfast would not be bad. That's interesting, yeah. So you eat dessert first. Life is short.
Yeah. Eat dessert first because you never know.
You never know.
You get hit by a bus.
And then you wouldn't have to write the boring chapters.
These are interesting life philosophies. It's kind of the glass half full versus half empty.
I always told my kids, easy, hard, hard, easy, which is if you do the easy part first, then you got the hard part later.
Actually,
it's easier to do the hard part first, and the easy part is you just...
Since we're on this topic, I will say that the guy who got me into writing, and let me think about this. This is literally 20 years ago. When we were working on our first book together, explained to me that, because he had written one book previously, that he would write for 1 hour and then he would play a video game for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And then he would write for 1 hour. And so the game that we played that year while we were writing that first book was Return of Castle Wolfenstein.
Wow.
Right.
You mean the original one? The one where the Nazis go,
no, the 3D. Yeah. Mein Leben, you know that one.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So that was a little later. The first one.
Not the Apple II.
It was on 8-bit sounds. So all the people. That is a great. At Wolfenstein 3D you played. Yeah.
And that's why.
Great game.
I mean, that game, like, we found, like, every secret in it. We did, you know.
Yeah, because it was anything.
And we wrote a book.
Anything was better than writing a book.
Well, we also wrote the book.
Anything was better than the Delphi Bible. Was that what the Delphi Bible
was?
It was
a few books before the Delphi Bible.
Wow. Wow.
So there you go.
Wow.
And people can, by the way, see the progress of this book because it is online, windowsphonebook.com.
It is online.
Yeah.
It's very close. It's very close.
That's neat. There's nothing better, to quote somebody else, the best part about writing is having written.
Yes.
Nothing better than finishing. Now, are you going to...
What am I on here? Let me look at it.
Do you have a lot of revisions after this?
I think... Oh, yeah, yeah. There's more to come. But... I think I have published 66 or 65 milestone, you know, copies of the book, like versions of the book.
What?
Since late. Like, I've, you know, as I write it, I publish a new.
Oh, book. I see. What, are you using Git or something?
No.
Using some sort of no, you know what? Gina Smith and I we were thinking about writing a book together, and it actually installed Subversion. It wasn't out yet, and we were going to use that as a way to write together.
Well,
didn't work.
You know, in the front, actually, I am going to add this as a joke. You know, in the front of a book of fiction, it says, "This is a work of fiction. None of the people, places, or situations are real." I'm going to do like a joke take on that, where it's like, "This is a work of nonfiction. All of the
everything.
Events and people and everything in here are in fact real.
These screenshots actually happened."
Yeah.
Your ability to duplicate the experience, however, we do not guarantee.
Yeah.
Somebody, I can't, you know, somebody in the chat room saying, hey, guys, this is supposed to be about Windows, not book writing.
Yep, fair enough.
No, that's not fair enough. Goodbye, Windows 8 guy. I hope you find a nice podcast in your future.
Right. Someone has to talk about Windows Phone.
Yeah.
Eldar M, which sounds Let's like a villain him. From Superman.
Star Trek.
Or yeah. Star Trek, yeah.
He is
like
a villain.
Like a guy with like an alien with a unibrow thing.
Eldar!
You guys know Eldar, right? Eldar Mortensen, is that how you pronounce his last name? This guy who has been in disputes in the past with Nokia, legal disputes, and works on a site called Mobile Review. He was circulating a rumor this week saying Microsoft was thinking about going back to scratch with Windows Phone 9 and just scrapping everything they've done to date.
No, that's BS.
By the way, that would be great news for my book.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be
just
awesome.
In time for Paul to release a book about the old version.
Right. So I've been asking around about this because, you know what, you never can say never to anything. But everybody I've been talking to around, all my sources say no, 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 not correct. And, you know, I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about what Microsoft's doing with phone and the whole idea of creating the more common platform underneath, you know, like making the NT core the bottom layer and then making the app platform above that more common with Windows 8 and with the Xbox OS. So, you know, to some people, maybe that looks like scrapping everything. I don't know.
Oh, I don't want a Blades operating system on my phone. Really?
Well, you know what, though? I do think they're going to move these things closer and closer
they are.
Together.
But who gets who goes which way? Kind of
a Windows RT and Windows Phone. You know, there will be commonality. There are already commonalities. There'll be more of them. Eventually, they may literally have this, you know, support the same two runtimes and go forward with one of them or whatever, however they do it. And at some point, many people, and I'm sure Mary Jo and I will both write something along these lines, will say something like, yep, this is what they should have done all along, you know, but you know, you can't, we don't work at Microsoft. We don't know the intricacies of the strategy and the technologies and maybe what they are doing, which seems so obvious years down the road is not possible right away. And so I think we're going to get there. It's just, you know, it's just a path.
As the unibrow guy in the chat room just pointed out, isn't Windows 8 phone the inspiration for everything else? It all seems to be moving upstream from the phone, not the other
kind
way
of,
around, right?
In a way. Right. Like the tiled UI was the phone first, right? So that,
and there's precedent for that. Apple's operating system's heavily influenced by the iPhone on up. Because the future really is touch interfaces, and that's where it is most clearly implemented. I don't think touch Xbox is in the future. I hope not.
No. I mean, I don't think it means necessarily the operating system is going to be the exact same on all the platforms. All it really means is the core is the same, the API level is the same, the look and feel is more similar. But it doesn't really mean like the Windows operating system in full is on all of these platforms.
Right.
Like, you know, the way
so
they
is that where they would go, you think? They'd make a unified kernel for everything and it would...
They're already doing that. Yeah.
So that would make sense. That's then Mulder would be not so far off.
No. Well, I think he kind of was whipping people into a frenzy this week saying, you know, the way Microsoft had the reset from when it went from Windows Mobile to Windows Phone. And then again, when they had to make some very big changes from Windows Phone 7 to Windows Phone 8, and they had to say, hey, some of you guys aren't going to get the upgrade, right?
They've done it twice now. That's right.
I know. So he's whipping people into a frenzy about this. And people are saying, oh, forget it. I don't want Windows Phone. I'm going to have to scrap everything again. And that does not seem to be the case. We already know, in fact, because Microsoft has said this publicly, when Windows Phone 8.1, the blue version, comes out, it's going to run all your apps. It's not going to make you have to do anything to, you know, some people get it, some people don't. It's not going to be that. So we already know that's not happening. And you know, as far as when is Windows Phone 9, we have no idea. I mean, he was saying 2015. We don't really know. We don't know if they're going to continue, like, you know, go Windows Phone 8.1, Windows Phone 8.2.
I mean, 9 could be way down the road.
It could be way, way down the road.
That's a good point.
We don't know.
Yeah.
So this is kind of a meaningless.
It is, but I think we need to kind of dispute it because Microsoft, you know, when we're asking them to dispute it, all they're saying is we don't comment on rumors.
Oh, come on, Microsoft.
I wish they would say, I know they can't dispute
you want to
every
reassure,
rumor.
It's developers that are most concerned, right? I mean, we're not talking end users.
Yeah.
So that's a very special market that you could speak to directly and say,
Leo,
hey,
you're
guys,
suggesting that transparency is good.
For developers, I understand consumers, they don't want to tell consumers anything because then they might change their buying habits or something stupid like that. But you want to keep developers in the know. That's why Apple, when they do the Worldwide Developers Conference, kicks the press out and says, this is NDA, and you better not talk about it. And then they can be very free with what they're talking about, future plans. But Microsoft doesn't do that at Build. They don't
do NDA sessions.
They don't do NDA.
No, in fact, they publish all the sessions in full on their site, and anybody can look
at them.
Yeah.
Well, Apple does that, but you have to be a developer to look at it, right? Yeah. And you have to agree to the terms. You can't then go to the press, although it all leaks out eventually anyway, I guess.
Yeah, didn't their whole conference get leaked to you?
It basically all posted it. It gets leaked. So yeah. I
actually watched two of those videos before they got pulled, so they were up there for a while.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
It was like watching a Windows Phone video. It was like the same exact stuff, like typography, white space. I mean, it was like the same content.
Mobile development is mobile development. It's not, you know.
Well, I guess.
It's it's not rocket surgery, as Colleen used to say. So we've dismissed Eldar the Magnificent.
Eldar, I think Eldar is overstating the case.
On this episode of Mythbusters.
Yeah.
That's what the M stands for, the Magnificent. So who's got this article? Wireless carriers finally making smartphones affordable. You know, I have to say, when you look at the, are you talking about the Jump program from T-Mobile and then AT&T's response to that?
Next or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, The Verge and a couple of people have done some math.
Yeah, well, right, as you should.
Not so good.
No.
Sure. Well, it depends, though. It's if you're someone who does want to upgrade more regularly, and I do think there's a pretty big percentage of our population that is our population, meaning people who listen to this podcast, who are kind of gadget happy and would upgrade more frequently. And, you know, paying a little bit more to do that is.
Yeah, I'm paying a lot more
an option
right
than a lot of people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, no, that's what happens, right? Yeah. So if you're in the middle of a 2-year contract and the iPhone 6 comes out or whatever they're calling the next one, that's $600,
right.
You know, to start. And it's a lot of money. And so the ability to pay a little bit more and then just be able to upgrade normally.
Turns out to be a lot more. It's like $3,000 over the 2-year. You know, the question is really maybe you'd be better off. You should do the math first because you might be better off just buying outright unlocked phones.
Yeah, and actually that's the little note I added at the end. I mean, I don't know as much about the other parts of the market. I know Apple doesn't actually do this, and I'm not sure about Android. But, you know, there's an interesting recent trend with these Nokia devices where they're starting to offer low-end phones contractless, right? So 520, 521, and the 620 as well, which is under $200. You can buy a really kind of a decent phone for not a lot of money. This is interesting timing for me because everyone except for me in my family is on Verizon. And we've got a teenager who is not careful about anything. And then we've got a kid who's almost a teenager who is also not careful about anything. And Mark has taken this. My son has taken this, what used to be a $500 phone, and has turned it into a cracked screen, been at the bottom of a toilet. We've had it sitting in a bowl of rice to dry it out, you know, so you can use it again. And I'm thinking, you know, it'd be interesting if you could just buy something that wasn't super expensive and not really worry about it, you know. Whereas... you know, he just beats the crap out of these things. Like, he's just the thing falls out of his pocket. It ends up it's in the back of someone's car. It was left at the beach one time.
Well, it's really troubling to buy a smartphone for kids.
Yeah, yeah.
And certain adults. It's not just kids that we should point out. There are accident-prone adults.
Alex
as well.
Gumpel, for example, should never be allowed to have
a smartphone. Oh, my God. He's already broken his phone in a week again.
I heard he has a kin now. He was telling me that today.
Well, he got the kin after the first break, and then I guess he got another HTC 8X, and that's cracked. I'm more starting to
wonder. Oh, man. What?
Yeah, so Liz broke the first one, inadvertently, and the second one's already broken. The replacement.
Was this another? This wasn't Liz's fault?
No. No. He dropped it.
I've dropped mine so many times, and
we got in a plane with this
just
guy.
Bad luck.
What were we thinking?
You let him fly you around. It's not his fault. All of these phones, they have big plates of glass on the front, and if you hit it wrong, there's nothing anybody can do. Yeah. From Dow Corning on down, you cannot make.
I hear you, but I have dropped my phone numerous times from amazing heights. I have never broken a screen on any phone. Ever.
Oh,
now,
well,
now that
lucky.
I've said that,
you're just,
I will, of course,
bad mistake. You just blew it, kid.
Leo, mark my words, I will never.
It's unsinkable, he says.
In fact, while we talk, I'm going to juggle some of my phones. No, I mean, I
with a chainsaw.
Yeah.
No, I have my phone in, it's funny because, and I don't really care because I'm going to have a new phone every few months anyway. It's just part of the gig. I buy, you know, and I buy, what I buy is generally is European unlocked. I don't get them from the carriers. And you pay,
do you buy,
yes,
through Expansus, or what do you
Expansus,
buy?
Expansus, yeah. And you pay $600, sometimes a premium if you're ordering something that's, you know, you're the pre-order. And then I buy the cheapest, and I have cell phone plans from all four carriers because, you know, for reasons of testing. And I just always buy the cheapest plan across the board. And then just, yep, it's nice and easy with T-Mobile and AT&T because you just pop a SIM in.
Right.
It's a little harder with Verizon. You have to make a trip to the, you know, phone store necessary.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like this Galaxy S4 is in like an armored case with a door and stuff. You know, I mean, it's not, I don't have to worry about it that much. But nevertheless, you know, because this is going to be gone in a month anyway. So,
yep.
Just because it's the nature of the business. And that's one of the things that's very exciting. But I have to say, if you just bought a 925 or a 928 at Verizon, and you suddenly, Nokia says, oh, by the way, this 1020 is 41 megapixels, you might kind of be freaky. I don't know. It's an interesting challenge.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, and I think that's what the point of these.
Yes. So you're going to pay a little more. You're required with T-Mobile to buy a $10 a month replacement plan. That is, by the way, one benefit of this is it's also insurance. So you can break it.
Yeah.
So for somebody like Alex, might be,
let's face it, probably doesn't qualify for insurance anymore.
Well, yeah, you know, you got to read the fine print on those because there's a deductible, a big deductible in some cases, and you can only do it like once or twice a year.
He's uninsurable.
Yeah, he's done.
I think AT&T is going to be like, you know, maybe you would be better off at a different carrier.
He's on a do not sell list. When he walks into the store, they go, Gumple, G. Oh, yes, thank you very much. See you. Bye.
It's the type of thing where they like cut up your license and hand it back to you.
Nokia's new contract-free phone. So Nokia's doing, is this from a carrier or from Nokia? What's the 520, 521?
Both, I guess.
What's the deal there?
I bought it. You actually, the 521 is the one that's available in the U.S. So you can buy it on Amazon. It's $129. It actually comes in a T-Mobile box, and it has a T-Mobile SIM in it.
Ah.
And then you can activate it or not, your choice. It's funny, for that price, you know, I've had a bunch of people ask me, you know, you could use this kind of like an iPod Touch if you wanted to. And actually, that's a pretty good point. It's an interesting phone as a second device, you know, right, if you want to, which is actually how I use my old Windows phone now. I use it for podcasts and music and stuff. And I've actually got like a Windows phone, you know, like a
How does this compare to an 820 or 928?
So the places you're going to see a hit are the RAM. So it's 512 megabytes of RAM instead of 1 gig. That's going to limit you just to some games. It has a very small amount of internal storage, 8 gigabytes, but it's got micro SD, so you can go up to 64. There's no front-facing camera. So for people who do want to do that stuff, Skype or whatever, that's not there. The back-facing camera is 5 megapixels. It's decent. But no flash.
What? Really? Wow.
Yeah, no flash at all. Like, not even a... Yeah, like I'm kind of. So, you got that. But it's Windows Phone 8. It doesn't have NFC. It doesn't have wireless charging. And I don't think you can buy a shell, although the back panel does come off, and so you can purchase different color, you know, backs if you wanted to do that kind of thing. But, and it's, you know, it's does it say that you still have it up on the screen? I'm not sure how big the screen is. Maybe 4 inches.
It's 4 inches.
4 inches, yeah. So it's not a huge phone, but it's also not a tiny phone.
No, it's a decent phone. I mean, iPhone's 4 inches.
And it's a Lumia, right? So it's got this, when you hold it, you can just feel it. It's got a nice kind of, you know, feel to it. It's a decent phone. It would be great for kids, and it would be great for a second.
Yeah, and I think the real market, and everybody's going to do this. In fact, they say Apple's even going to do this. The real market is they've saturated the knuckleheads who will pay $600 for a phone.
Us, you might say.
They've topped that market. It's topped out, and now they're saying, well, how do we get the other 5 billion people on the planet to buy a smartphone?
Yep.
And this is the response is very inexpensive. You know, lower spec. The truth is, You can't make the spec too low because you got to run the OS, right. But you got to make a differentiator. Otherwise, everybody's going to buy the cheap one.
Honestly, you know, Windows Phone 8, you see processors that are up to 1.5 gigahertz, dual cores where we're at. One gig of RAM is the is where they kind of max out, except on the 1020. This is, you know, something like a 720, which was, you know, kind of a mid-level phone internationally, has roughly the same specs. I mean, it's a thinner kind of, you know, it's a nicer phone in some ways. It's also a lot more expensive. It's really not a horrible phone. I don't really think that there are any, like, super cheap, cheap in the sense of cheaply made really bad phones, like on the Windows Phone side. Right. It's one of those nice things about it. I mean, even a basic Windows phone is... Right, it's actually really nice.
Well, but that's why you take things like the flash out, or you do a 5-megapixel camera, because you can't. Yeah. There's really a very narrow area that you can work in with the processor and RAM.
Yep. Yep.
So you and it's kind of artificial. It's like making a Celeron. Remember in the old days, Intel would take a Pentium chip, they'd take out the cache and say, "Here, it's a Celeron." It's kind of like that. You got to make a differentiation, but you can't make it too stupid, or nobody's going to want it. Smaller, no flash, things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's more than adequate, it sounds. So is this going to be your main phone?
No.
Yeah. No. You what is your day-to-day?
It's a 920.
The 920.
Yeah.
And Mary Jo, you're using the 8X, right?
8X. Yeah. Yep.
Both excellent. Are you both either of you thinking of going to a 1020?
Yeah, well, we're both supposed to get them pretty soon.
Oh, cuz you went to the event. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah,
I told these guys, you know, I reminded them today, you know, I'm going to Europe in about a week.
Now and, would be a good time.
This would be a great time to deliver it, because if that happens, I will use this as my camera when I'm there. This will be my phone. Like, I'll use it for everything.
Yeah, yeah.
And but it goes on sale next week, too, right? Like, it's, July 26th. Yeah.
For Verizon? For whom?
No,
yeah,
I mean, AT&T.
AT&T, yeah, of course.
Yeah, if they don't come through, which, you know, Nokia and Microsoft, I don't know, we'll see, but... I would certainly buy one locally, right? Which would be a great thing to do on the eve of a trip. You know, spend $600 on a phone. My wife would be ecstatic.
It's your job, dude. It's tax deductible. You know? Let the taxpayers subsidize it, Paul. Sure. That's my advice to you.
Yeah. So I may. Well, I will if I have to. I mean, I'd like to take this thing to Europe. So.
Ah, yeah. It does. It, do we know what the price is going to be subsidized from AT&T? Is it $300?
$299. Yeah, it's $300.
$300.
Yeah, it's not inexpensive. It's not a.
And of course, you don't qualify for in any way for a subsidy.
No,
Paul is a smartphone one percenter.
It's like you ask that question at the AT&T store, and they kind of look at the screen and they look at you, and they're
You got to go at least a month.
You're joking, right?
You bought a phone in March.
You haven't even taken the plastic wrap off of the front of the phone you're using now.
It's true. Know? It's so embarrassing. So embarrassing. Yeah. You know what I do, and this is even worse. I shouldn't admit this. But, you know, I have a family plan. So we have, I think, four phones on AT&T. So I just steal the upgrades from my kids.
So I actually have two lines. I don't share them with my kids. But neither one of them are.
Henry's going to be really disappointed. He says, "Dad, I've had this phone for 2 years. It's time for a new one." No.
Yeah.
Really?
Sorry about that.
No, they've doubled that time now.
I've got a kin, however, that you can have. It's barely used.
Yeah.
What is the actual cost of the 1020, you think? You think it costs unsubsidized? Do you think it's 600?
I believe it's is it more? 600. I think that was.
See, everything seems to be in that price range.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's not inexpensive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we've been talking over the last 6 months about the tumbling PC market, and some of that is semantics. You know, what is a PC and all of that. And really one way to look at this, I think, is to look at Intel, since I think it would be a fairer way to say to divide the market between ARM processors and x86 processors and say x86. Not even say PC, but just say x86 sales, ARM sales. You know, because ARM's mobile, tablet.
Well, Intel would like there not to be ARM sales.
I know.
So that's the central issue. And by the way, for all this talk about the PC market and Intel's earnings, which we'll get into, one of the things you can look at is how well does Intel do in the smartphone market?
They don't have a presence at all.
Intel's in the smartphone market.
There's zero.
Actually, yeah, they are. And
they are.
They lost like $608 million. I mean, they don't really. You can't think of a single example of an Intel chip in a phone.
No, I mean they did the Scale processor, hoping to get mobile.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody's going to put an Atom or a Celeron in that. In fact,
Although, you know, Steve Jobs considered putting an Atom in the iPad when that was in development, and, you know, things could change. But as of today,
I think that was pro forma. I think they have such a – Apple and Intel have such a close relationship.
Yeah.
That they had to look at the Intel.
Just look at it, yeah.
Yeah. That's nice.
I'm sure Apple came back to them and said, you're kidding, right?
We can't sell something with a one-hour battery life. People want more.
Well, no, actually, Atom gets great battery life. It's just
okay. It's just not very fast.
It does it at the expense of performance, yeah.
Yeah. The Lumia 1020, according to Rev in the chat room, is $659.99, which is actually pretty good, given that chip. It's $50 more than the
iPhonian prices.
iPhonian. That's an iPhonian. Yeah. Tell us how Intel did, and what does it mean? There's one thing they said in their call. Brian Krasnich, the new CEO, said that he hopes that he's going to see x86 plus Android. Mm-hmm. There's only one, to my knowledge, device that's the Samsung.
He's got to be the only person on Earth looking forward to that.
And Android I guess you could get Android running on x86. I think they build
the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
I don't know how Samsung's doing it. Are they?
You mentioned this poor guy. This guy just took over Intel, right? Yeah. It would be like taking over the world's biggest cruise liner company, just as planes were taking off. You know, I mean, like, it doesn't mean it's over for Intel. I mean, I think you know, like I said, they could have a massive play in mobile and should. I don't know why they haven't, but even more so than Microsoft, I would say that this company is just perceived as being that kind of old school PC company. Like it's like they can't shake it.
Chatroom's telling me there are x86 Android devices, including, I didn't know this, the Galaxy Note 3.
Really?
Oh, wow.
I don't think that's true, but they're saying that. And the chat room never lies. You can, of course, recompile. There's no question you can recompile Android for x86. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying how many people are building that?
Yeah.
Right.
The ATV presumably would be one.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. We'll see. But
Biggity Bong, who I trust with my life, says Android on x86 is an example, is the Logitech Google TV. Which four of us bought.
Unbelievable.
But that makes sense because that's always plugged in, right? That's always on. Always, you know, it's not a mobile device.
Yeah, Galaxy Tab 3 is...
Tab 3, not Note 3. I'm sorry, yes.
Tab 3.
X86. I'm surprised we can't keep those tablets straight. Yeah, why? It's not like there are 1,300 versions of them.
Yeah, the Tab 3 will be launched tomorrow in India. So that's the confidence that Samsung has in that device.
Intel probably has a mission accomplished sign that they've hung on the corporate headquarters.
You know what's weird is how much it looks like. The reason we're confused, look at it. It looks just like a Galaxy phone.
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, just. Exactly.
So what differentiates a tablet from a Galaxy tablet? Does anybody know? Is it like just the pen?
Yeah, the Note has a pen. The Tab does not. These are 7, 8, and 10.1 inch.
Yep.
It will...
By the way, I got an ad from Samsung in the mail for what I believe was a dishwasher.
Samsung makes fridges, right? Everything, yeah.
Yeah. So it's okay that they do that. Like, I don't... You know, some people make fun of them for making dishwashers or fridges or whatever they make. Like, I don't care about it. But why would you send me that ad? Like, did I have a good
experience? You bought something from Samsung before,
and now I want you to wash my clothing or something. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, man.
So
it's like Sony selling insurance in Asia. You know, like it doesn't.
I got to point out, Biggity Bong, that according to this story, these are not running x86 processors. It's running a Marvell in one, and an Exynos in another. These are ARM devices as well. Where did you see, Mary Jo, that it...
I just binged it. I Googled...
Probably Biggity Bong binged it too.
I Googled x86 Intel Tab, and a lot of links came up.
Okay. So maybe
By the way, I just want to be clear about something. Mary Jo actually does say the phrase, I binged stuff.
I binged
it. She actually says
it. I only say it to annoy you, though.
Okay, because I was going to say the only other place I've ever seen it is in what is clearly product ads. Placement in a TV show.
Oh yeah,
it's really the TV show. Does anybody know how somebody gets this disease?
Oh, Bing it.
I don't know. Let's Bing it. You know, like this is a thing. You know, like we're going to Bing it.
No, I only say it to annoy you. Trust me.
I do get a little, like, kind of annoying. A chill up my spine every time you say it for some reason.
I know.
Here it is. So the current shipping ones, the ones that are coming out today, are ARM processor based.
Okay.
Quoting this story from DNA India, where it's being released, there are chances that the 10.1-inch Intel-powered tablet could be heading our way sometime later. So that's not out yet, but
it's just okay.
It's know when you have 10.1 inches, you could put enough battery in there. I want to say you could divide that market much better than PC and tablet or PC and phone with x86 ARM. That's the division.
But why would you? I mean,
well, because then you could say there's
Android app running that thing.
Yeah, you have to recompile it for x86.
Then why would you do it?
Right.
I mean, because you'd have to have a separate store, wouldn't you? Yeah.
That's why. Yeah. Who wants that?
Well, that's a good
Microsoft
point.
Microsoft has one store, right, for ARM and Intel-based apps.
They do. Yeah. Yep.
So
no, but Android doesn't. I mean, there's no Android market for x86 apps. I mean, no. It's like
you want
all the
own
advantages of Android, except for the apps, which I believe is the only advantage of Android. That just seems crazy to me.
Yeah.
Well,
but let's get back to the important bit of this conversation.
Yes,
Mary Jo, a great note.
I want to talk about this because. I saw Dr. Pizza and Paul and a few other people talking about this. So, you know, on Intel's earnings call, they really talked up how they're excited about the low end of the market. Like, we're going to have these sub $400 ultrabooks, and it's going to be great.
They've been saying that all year, yeah.
We are not alone. There's a category of us out there who would pay a lot of money for a nice Windows laptop. And I am so sick of hearing, wait, we can get the price really down and it's going to be awesome and you're going to love this. I want a MacBook equivalent in the Windows world. Can somebody make me one?
Samsung, ironically, comes pretty close.
I know. Samsung's making some, right?
But you're right. And I, you know, backed by data from NPD and from internal Microsoft documentation, I wrote an article, I think last year, where I talked about how PC makers destroyed the market for PCs by artificially creating a bigger than usual market by selling really cheap netbooks and conditioning consumers to expect those kinds of prices and not to pay reasonable prices, meaning even just, you know, $600 to $800 for a computer, because they could get some piece of junk for $300 to $400. And now that we have tablets that are also selling for that same price range, and people are moving increasingly to those, as the market for PCs kind of naturally dries up anyway, it's exasperated by the fact that people don't want to spend. So even when they do buy a PC, they want to buy these cheap things, not, you know, some reasonable device. And here's Intel leading this charge to the bottom. Like, our future is cheap devices, you know, like, great. It's like you're selling, you know, rip-off DVDs on a corner of a street in New York instead of, you know, the real thing. Like, I guess you could get the movie experience, but it's really not the same.
That guy wandering in front of the screen is really annoying after a while.
Yeah. Could you stop coughing, sir? I'm trying to get the cord back here.
I'm trying to make a movie. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, Shmuley on Twitter is saying, what about Surface Pro? Isn't this the device you're talking about? Not really. I want a notebook with an attached keyboard. Like, a Surface Pro book would be great, right?
Yeah.
Something with like an great battery life, Haswell chip.
Yeah. Yep. Me too. I love the Surface Pro. It's just a little too small. And even when you move up to an 11-point-something inch screen, it's a noticeable improvement. And why not like a 13-inch screen?
Right.
You know, like a real computer? I don't know. Just, just a thought.
Yeah, I don't know. So I think it's discouraging to hear Intel talking up how great these new netbook 2.0s are going to be. Let's have some premium machines too.
You know, one of the reasons is because of somebody told me, I don't know if this this is relative as opposed to gross numbers, that the Chromebook is the fastest growing segment out there right now, right? Now that means
fastest growing segment of sub $300.
So Intel may say, hey, you know.
Yeah.
You want me some of that Chromebook.
I want some of that good Chromebook action.
This stuff is all just a race to the bottom. Here's Intel that makes the most powerful chips on Earth. And all they're focused on, all they care about apparently, is Chromebooks, tablets, and what we would used to call netbooks.
Haven't we driven them to that, though? I mean, isn't that what the market's demanding?
You know what?
I know.
This is the Steve Jobs thing. People don't know what they want, Leo. So
they want to spend less.
If you give them what they want, you're not always doing the right thing. And this is, I think they've harmed the market.
I agree.
Irrevocably. Like, I think this is, we have gone around a corner that we're never getting back from. Like, it's just, the device that I use every day is that kind of MacBook Air style Samsung device that costs, it's expensive. It was $1,200 or $1,300. When I bought it a year ago, it doesn't have touch. You know, so it's like a Windows 7 type machine. I love it. It is just a fantastic machine. But most people don't want to spend that kind of money on a Windows computer.
Yeah.
And it's because of the conditioning over the past, I was now several years. I mean, it was early Vista days when, you know, Vista wouldn't work on an Ultrabook. Yeah. I'm sorry, on a notebook.
People call the radio show all the time and I need a new computer. What's your budget? $250, $300,
yeah,
$500 maybe. Wow. You know, and I say, you can buy it, but the problem is you can buy those computers. Of course you can. I keep saying to them, you're not, you know, you get what you pay for. You're not going to be happy. Yeah. It's going to wear out. It's going to cause
like a
more
paradox,
problems.
Though, because when you spend a reasonable amount of money on a computer, and by reasonable, I don't mean $2,000, $3,000. I mean $800, whatever. Those things last for a really long time. And that's the other weird part of the PC market.
It's dying. And that's why Intel's
buying
going
as many
that
computers
way.
As they used that's to, because their computers last longer than they used to.
Yeah.
But that kind of explains Intel's point of view, right?
Right. It does, why couldn't one PC vendor like just say, okay, everybody else has raced to the bottom, and you know what? We're going to try and see if we can make money as a race to the top. And like, even if we're the only one who does it.
Well, some people are doing it. You just don't hear about them because they're not doing so well.
Yeah, I think...
Leo, you're not helping.
I would pay
Alienware does, right?
Yeah. I don't want a gaming laptop. I want something portable.
You know who's a good probably person to ask is Lenovo, because they have the full range, right?
Yeah.
They have
that's very fair. Lenovo certainly has some very high quality computers.
They have both. They do both. Yeah. And you can say a price and there'll be something in that range.
Yeah. That's
but
true.
You know,
that's
I want something cool looking and not I'm a ThinkPad user from way back, but I want something that I take it out of my laptop case and everybody wants it. I want that.
So you don't think the Carbon X1 meets that criteria?
Yeah.
I think it's close.
Yeah.
And how much is that one?
Those are expensive.
Yeah, they are.
In fact, I the touch version of that is probably as expensive as a MacBook Air. I mean, it's not a cheap computer, but
there's a reason why the MacBook Air costs what it costs. I think people think that Apple is gouging. You know, they're increasing their margins. And admittedly, they're high margin devices, but there's a reason why they cost that much. You're getting what you pay for.
Yeah, it's funny. A lot of people on Twitter right now who are listening to the show are saying, like Chris Woodruff just said, you know, a lot of people who are in the market I'm talking about, the premium Windows market, they buy MacBook Pro and they put Windows on it. That's
a small number. And I wouldn't recommend that because you're then dependent on Apple for your drivers.
No, I'm not saying it's good.
There are issues there.
There's no touch.
But it's not just I can't learn the new keyboard. That stuff's fine, but. You know, Sandro discovered on his MacBook Retina that thing gets whatever the crazy amount of battery life when it runs on Mac, but it gets half the battery life on Windows. And I mean literally half.
No, and that's because you
Windows
have to have
can't
an
do
OS.
It because Apple puts less than spectacular drivers.
Ah, that's interesting.
In their boot camp stuff. And you are beholden to them. And you also have to keep a Mac OS install in there because that's the only way you can do firmware updates.
Right.
And it gets into a whole, there's a whole subculture of people who do this stuff, but it really is not ideal.
It's not ideal.
And I've done this, of course, myself as well. I did this for a time.
I think there are very high quality Air compatible. I think my Acer S7 is in that
ballpark.
Yeah, that's
a good machine.
And now when you put a Haswell on it, and they've improved some of the things that were bad about it.
The Samsungs are good. They don't have the Lenovo keyboards.
Yeah.
The Lenovo's are nice.
Lenovo's the one you want, right? The Carbon.
Yeah, that could be it. What if it had a red lid?
Yeah.
Or something.
Just look what I did to my hair. I just put a purple cover on it. You can do that, you know.
Yeah.
You don't have...
People
they do
want
sell skins.
Something.
Lenovo sells these skins. Yeah,
skin,
skin
it. You know? It's a good idea anyway.
Yeah, I know.
Put a skin on it says my laptop is better than your laptop, or my laptop beat up your laptop.
You know, I have the Chromebook Pixel, only because Google gave it to me. I'd originally ordered it, and then after I played with it, I thought, I don't want this for $1,500. That's $1,500.
I know.
$1,500, and I don't think Google's making a lot of money on it. I don't think that was their intent.
No.
It's beautiful. It feels good. It's touch. It's retina. It's
What's the airplane experience like? Would you say you watched a lot of movies crossing the country?
There's no airplane experience.
Yeah. It's just not ideal either. Yeah. That's the other thing.
It's not worth $1,500, and I don't recommend it by any means, but I'm just pointing out, if you want to make that nice hardware, it doesn't even have USB 3.
Yeah.
It's like a Surface RT or something in that regard.
Yeah.
You know, Steven Sandoff says, what if Nokia made a laptop? Not the rumored tablet, but like that would be probably like pretty high-end and pretty awesome, right?
But don't you sort of see, I mean, the fear with Nokia making a Windows device is that it'll be RT because they know that platform better.
You know, so if it was a new Qualcomm chip, I don't have the hatred of RT that you have. So I would be.
I think RT's dead.
Hatred is a strong word.
No, RT's dead. No, RT's dead. RT's dead.
I disagree. Disagree.
Who? Nobody's buying it.
Nobody's buying it because right now the chip is underpowered in the Surface RT.
The current hardware is awful.
Great,
yeah.
If you had a great ARM chip in there, I would.
You are
Mary
one.
Jo, I've been meaning to. I was thinking we should talk about this, and I forgot to put it in the notes because I wrote an article this week that was a little bit critical of Surface RT, and it always brings out the Surface fans who can't stand that kind of stuff. But I have to say, in using Windows 8.1, I see that even me, who does like having a multiple windows open and all that kind of stuff, could move to like this Metro environment, and that in such a case, Windows RT would be just fine. And that if all of the stuff that I used, if that was in Metro. RT would give me the battery life and all that kind of stuff. So as much as I can sit here today and tell people I don't think you should buy this thing now for the reasons you decided because of the hardware, I do think that if they keep it going and they go to Tegra 4 and the chipset improves and the software improves on that side, this story could be very different a year from now. The only problem is that, you know, what has it been, 9 months or something since they launched Surface RT? I mean, the sad reality is that the situation hasn't changed that much. I mean, obviously the apps have gotten better, but the underlying platform is just, you kind of install 8.1 and you think, oh, maybe this will make the difference. And it really, it doesn't, right?
It helps a little. It does. But yeah.
Someday.
And you know, the reason
I'm tie a yellow ribbon around the tree.
I'm an RT fan because I, like I've said a million times on the show, don't need a lot of desktop apps. I'm not like a lot of the listeners of the show are, right? So I run, when I have my Surface RT,
are a woman and...
Well, yeah, that too.
...are a normal person.
Okay, that too, but...
You remind me of Jeff Jarvis and his Pixel. He swears the Chromebook Pixel is all he needs. There are people who have very simple needs. You use Notepad.
I do.
It's like the guy in the insane asylum who ensures you that he is, in fact, President Grant. And that
I take this seriously. Writers are a very good example. Really, all a writer needs, you know, your writers, is a piece of paper,
and a pen.
But if you're a photographer, a videographer, if you make music, if you... program. I mean, there's lots of things people do with technology that doesn't work in these situations.
Yes,
so
totally.
The question is, are there a lot of you out there?
Yeah.
Right.
And I it's going to be a race to see if they can get RT appeal to people before Microsoft finally gives up on it.
Yeah.
And I think...
There is, unfortunately, this is a reality we all need to address here. There is, unfortunately, a lot of precedent for what Leo just described, you know, and I think that needs to factor into this as well. I mean, I am
nervous. What is Microsoft's stomach for this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's about 4 years. So I don't know. We'll see. That's what it's been historically. I mean, I guess we'll see.
And there's also a larger strategic question because, you know, there are those who make the point that maybe RT is the future. I think you guys have even made this the future of Windows.
Yeah.
That really, right, that's what I mean. The RT words, is the actual Windows 9.
If Microsoft's plans actually come to fruition, RT would be incredibly viable. You know, and that requires the hardware to evolve over a number of years. It requires that software platform and the supporting ecosystem to evolve, obviously. But yeah, and I mean this. I mean this honestly, because the more I use 8.1, there are instances in 8.1 where you do such things as open a photo attachment in an email using the Mail app, and it does that automatic split screen thing where the photo opens in the photo app, and you've still got the email app over here. And you, there's some instances like Reading List and Internet Explorer is another good example of that, although the split is different, where I sort of look at that and I think this actually makes some sense. This addresses that central issue I always had with the iPad as a productivity tool where you could only be looking at one thing at a time. And there was no, and there still isn't, I don't believe, a way on a keyboard with an iPad to switch quickly between two things. And certainly there's no way to look at two things at the same time. But that kind of capability, as simple as it sounds, in many ways puts it over the top from a productivity standpoint, if that makes sense. It's a simple thing. It's just a little, it's not multiple windows everywhere on your screen, but it's, is it enough? I mean, honestly, in many circumstances, yeah.
I think of students, and this is what came up for me with the Chromebook. I think of students. I mean, the way I write or work is I have other windows open. And the bigger the screen and the more windows I can have, the better. And this seems to be moving in the other direction. I don't
maybe.
Know. How do you
way,
write? How do you write, Mary Jo? Don't you have other notepad and then, or are you I just doing it all out of your head?
No, I take notes on paper.
Oh, you have a reporter's notebook. There you
I do.
Go. Yeah,
yep.
That's the way.
Then I write my article using my notes and I write a notepad. Then I cut and paste out a notepad into our CMS system.
So full screen is not a problem for you at all.
No.
So let me show you guys something. I don't know how easy this will be for you to see, but if you refresh the notes, I just pasted in what my screen looks like. Even though I use the desktop, when we do this show, I have Skype snapped to the left, and I have OneNote snapped to the right. And I am, in effect, using this thing I just described already on the desktop. Like, and a lot of times, and I don't honestly do this exactly like this when I write, but you could imagine a web browser open on one side and your word processing application or notepad or whatever you're using to write in on the other side. I mean,
and this will be better, I guess, with 8.1 where you can have an arbitrary size for those panes.
Yeah.
Because this pane right now is a little... I or can't get even, your image, unfortunately, because I'm doing this on a Mac.
Yeah, it's not hard to imagine. It's a split screen thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's some intelligent automatic snapping in 8.1 that I think is really kind of cool. So when you, use Reading List to save articles for later, it opens in a very thin pane on the side by default. It's not something you have to do. It does that automatically. And then the other app, which is typically Internet Explorer, although it doesn't have to be, is on that bigger slice. And I don't know, maybe I'm just getting like sliding into dementia, but I find that kind of simplicity vaguely appealing. Like I wish that I could, you know, use this kind of thing more often. And maybe that's maybe that is the future.
It's funny because it's also the past. Because in the earliest days of GUIs, there was a massive debate. I'm old enough to remember this between tiled windows and overlapping windows. And even at Microsoft, there was this debate with Windows 1.0.
Sure.
And
you know,
there
this
was contentious. And we decided, by the way, everybody, overlapping.
Yeah. A lot of people are going to really disagree with this because they live by all these multiple windows and multiple tabs and windows. And you know, but there's something to be said for the fact that we've maybe lost track of what it is we're doing. I mean, maybe we've kind of complexity'd our way out of this. I mean, like we've got all this stuff going on. It's like, I mean, are we even paying attention anymore? It's kind of hard to say.
A lot of the argument for tiled was...
Maybe this is a natural trend back to something that makes more sense.
Well, as I remember at the time, the reason people wanted tiled had as much to do with performance and processor speed. You had such limited constrained systems, it was very hard to do overlapping windows. And so... It seemed to me the consensus was, hey, we would do overlapping if we could do it well, but we can't, so we're going to tiled really is the way
to go.
Well,
there were performance issues, too.
Yeah, remember, that's what I'm saying.
You would move something and it would redraw very
right,
slowly.
Remember? But we've solved all that.
Yeah.
Why are we going back to tiled? Why?
We need to go back to sprites. that's what we need.
It's making me feel old, damn old, because I don't want thin clients.
Technology is ultimately
Chromebook is a thin client. I don't want a thin client. I want overlapping windows. I feel like
By the way, I do want RT. I want RT that works. You know, like that's the thing. Like I think the reason I'm frustrated by RT is because I see it and it's just not quite there, you know? Yeah.
Somebody asked me on the radio show, I want to buy a Windows RT tablet. Should I? And I said, the only reason that RT, even at the new $300, $350 price point, makes sense is you get a free copy of Office.
Yeah.
But don't think you can run any of your existing Windows apps on it, because you can't.
By the way, I write stuff like that, and people say, I like it because it can't run those apps.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And Shakespeare wrote sonnets because he just didn't want to. He just liked iambic pentameter.
I'm not saying you have to run them, but I mean, you know, the options.
No, I mean, when I was deciding what to get from, because I knew I was going to get a Surface, I went with the RT because of the battery life primarily, and it's double what the Pro is. So,
right,
you know,
you
again,
get good
not
battery
everybody
life
cares.
Now, would it, that's, is that, I mean, is that the only reason?
It's slightly thinner and lighter and the better battery life. Because, you know, for what I do...
I would say significantly thinner. I noticed.
Yeah, it feels more distributed in weight, right, than the Pro does.
The Pro is denser, and that's the problem. You pick it up, you're like, wow, this is heavy for what it is. Whereas the RT is like, yes, this is the right weight for this thing.
Yeah, so everybody, you know, everyone has the thing that is like their thing, right? For a lot of people like me, I think battery life is really a huge, huge thing.
Yeah, and I love having choice. I'm not, you know, it's great that there you can get hardware that suits you.
Yeah.
And I would never say, well, don't make anything Mary Jo would like. That's not what I'm saying at all.
I might say that, but yes.
There's also economics involved in a company that is making something that, you know, only 10,000 Mary Jo's like.
Yeah. Well, you know what's worth pointing out here too is the other group of people who will like this besides people like me are executives, in theory.
Oh yeah,
right?
That's right. They want the dashboard, but they're buying iPads too, right?
Right. So and they don't care that they can't run Visual Studio, right? They just want to have something they can check their email, you know, do some quick light editing on something, look at their PowerPoint. Yes, great. And that is also a very big category. I mean, that's how iPads made inroads into banks.
Oh, yeah.
Because the executives wanted those and they brought them in.
Right.
So if Microsoft could convince, you know, more executives to take Surface RT tablets and start using them, it may kind of spur more app development, more improvements in the platform. I think right now they just are kind of in such a version one state that they don't really know what to do with it. Right.
It's easy, you know, humans have no sense of history or perspective. We just think that this is the way it is now, the way it always will be and always has been. And of course, there's going to be some evolution here.
That's a great point. I run into this all the time. It's like, you know, I've always done things a certain way, so why can't I keep doing it this way? In fact,
that's me.
That's not you. This is the planet. We get into this thing. We call it like tradition.
Yeah.
But we forget what the point of this thing was and how maybe it doesn't apply anymore. Yeah. But we you know, this is going to come up later. My tip will involve this very topic.
I like computers.
Seriously. I like eggs.
I like eggs. I want soup. But I also like a command line. But I like a command line in a multi-windowed environment.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yep. I still like multi-windows, too.
Why? You don't even use them.
But I like having them there. Yes. It's weird. It's like I like having things happen.
Security.
Like I don't just have two things snapped because I also want to have my Twitter feed open.
Right.
And I want to have like a lot of things going on.
You can't
on
do that on an RT. You can do it on two RTs.
Right. That's why I don't do work on the RT.
That's the answer.
Buy more RTs.
Buy more RTs. Make a pyramid out of them.
By the way, I just want to point out, your reporter's notebook has extremely long battery life.
It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, but you know what? You know what, though?
What?
The movie service really blows.
It does.
But it does work on an airplane.
You gotta make like a little animation in the corner, and then you
flip
through
it. Flip book.
Yeah.
Microsoft earnings are coming up this afternoon, too, right?
Are we
anything to look for?
Let's look for Windows sales.
Will they say, though? They don't break it out. They don't say, right? I mean, they just...
Sometimes
20 million a month. 20 million a month.
It's not going to be 20 million a month.
It's not?
Yeah.
No.
Doubtful.
Really?
No, actually, I'll tell you. They said at one of the recent shows, either Build or Tech It or maybe even the partner conference that... Actually, it was probably the partner conference. And it was probably Tammy Reller who said... That Windows 8 sales have continued at the same pace. They've made a general statement like that. And so if you look at the last announcement, I don't remember the exact number I came up with, but I believe it was somewhere in the 14.3 million per month range, something like that. And so if that's the case, I guess we could extrapolate the time out and figure out where they would be at. But they hinted that the sales were steady from the previous announcement.
Yeah, but we're going to watch, obviously, because they're still reporting the same five business segments as they already have now, even though they just reorged. They're going to be talking about Windows clients separately. So everyone's going to be looking at that number, obviously, see.
Oh, that's interesting. You mean next time, because of the reorg, they won't?
We don't know when or how they're going to change the reporting structure. They haven't announced that yet.
Mm, that's interesting.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
A kind of a nice side benefit. We no longer have to tell you anything.
I know, right. You know. I mean, if they report according to the engineering groups, they would report Xbox, phone, and Windows together.
That's a great idea.
You could hide a lot of things.
Yeah, so, I mean, what that means, though, is they might just say, I mean, obviously, they're always going to come up with these milestone numbers for certain products. Like, yeah. I'm sure they'll say at some point, you know, the Xbox One has sold 5 million units since whatever date, you know. But as a business unit or an engineering group or however they divide these things up, you know, that business that is responsible for Windows plus Windows Phone plus whatever else earned, whatever net income plus revenues, that's all they have to say about it. They don't have to divide it out between all the different products necessarily. I mean, maybe they will, but something tells me that they won't. I mean, I think part of the point behind this was to push a couple of those little low performers under the rug, mm-hmm. you know?
Right. Like they never report Windows Phone separately right now. That's part of the Xbox division, right? So we never really know how they're doing with Windows Phone.
Right.
That model's
working. Why not apply it to the rest of the company?
Yeah, you know? I know. Yep.
The engineering division is doing quite well, thank you.
Well, by the way, online services, which has been losing money
since... Right, we can hide that now, too.
Since dinosaurs walked the earth.
Yeah.
Is now going to make money because Office 365 is part of it.
Look at that.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. There's ways to fix problems, Leo.
You know, maybe this is the whole rationale for the reorg. Do you think?
It's going to be interesting to see how they report. And we don't even know if they're going to do reporting along those engineering lines. We have absolutely no information. Like people are guessing it's going to be that way, but we don't know. Let's see.
Very interesting.
Yep. Yep, so 4 o'clock today, you'll see Microsoft earnings. It's also for their end of their whole fiscal year. It's not just one quarter. It's their Q4 and fiscal 2013 earnings are all being announced. And they always do it. They time this with their big annual sales conference, which is happening in Atlanta this week, called MGX. So they can announce this and all the people can cheer. Yay, 50,000 cheering sales people.
The sales conference is where Steve Ballmer really shines, right? That's the one where he jumps around and he takes people's phones and he smashes them and all that stuff.
Yeah, that fun stuff.
I hope we get video. They don't stream that, right?
Did I ever tell you guys the story about how myself and one other person walked into what at the time was the Windows, like NT building or whatever? They had just delivered... I guess it was NT5 Beta 2 or something. And I walked in on, I think it was Jim Alchin and Steve Ballmer was there, and they were leading like an internal rah-rah session because they had delivered this milestone. I just walked through the door because I look like I work at Microsoft. And back then, the security wasn't as good. But it was a Nazi youth rally in there. They were literally chanting NT everywhere, NT everywhere. And it was like rocking the building.
You have to do that with salespeople.
I looked at this guy I was with, and I said, "We got to get the hell out of here."
Help!
And so we headed to the door. And I swear to God, we're heading out the door, and this guy says, "You two, stop." And we stopped, and I turned around, and he said, "You forgot your T-shirts." And so I said, "Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry." And he gave us T-shirts. So it was the craziest thing. And then we walked out, and I was like, "We need to get as far away from here as possible."
It feels like you should write a movie script around that. Yeah, that's great.
It was insane.
I love it.
It was insane.
The NT Crashers.
Yep.
Yeah. No, you have this is a. I know this from working in radio stations. Sales teams are a kind of a different breed. It's, first of all, it's the most horrible job in the world. It's grinding. People say no to you a lot. And so the only way to keep salespeople motivated is you've really got to cheer them up. You got to rah-rah and motivate them and get them excited. And I understand that. And that's what Bomber really is doing. People don't, when they see Bomber, they don't get it. That's what a sales manager does. That's how you get people out there and
Yeah, I mean, at the partner show, the one who does that mostly is Kevin Turner, who's the COO. I mean, he gets on stage, there's 15,000 partners, and he just revs them up by going, "We're ahead of Oracle." Like, yeah, they have all these data points. Right. Who knows where the numbers come from, right? And everyone's usually like, yeah, cheering. This year was a little more subdued, but other years it's been pretty rah-rah at partner as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's nobody's critically reviewing the numbers.
No.
That's not the
point.
You're
not looking at the graph going, who's doing this?
I don't know why we're cheering, folks. I was just going over this Excel spreadsheet. And,
bye. Here's your T-shirt. Go. Because really, the whole point is everybody's united in this desire to cheer up. It's going to be all right. There's this, you know, unity. Salespeople are very simple. They're optimists. They're natural optimists. And they just want to be happy.
Maybe everyone will get a Surface RT.
Yeah. when everybody got a Pixel, a Chromebook Pixel at the Google I.O., that's when you knew they weren't selling. When they now that they give away RTs, you're kind of thinking,
Yeah.
Although, you know, they also are still selling them, even though they're only $100 at things like TechEd and all that. People want
lining
them.
Up.
They're buying. Yep, they're buying them.
There's a perceived value.
People love the deal aspect of it. I mean, and by the way, $99 for Surface RT is kind of hard.
It's an amazing deal.
I would buy it then. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I would buy one then.
It is.
Yep.
I'm not sure $350, though, I would buy one, especially because it doesn't have a type cover. Now you got another $100 for that.
Right. Yep.
Now you're $450. There's computers for that price with Windows.
Sure.
All right, so to this afternoon, we'll watch for... the Q4 results from Microsoft. And, there's not going to be any surprises, right?
I don't know.
You always wonder.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think this has been a great year for Windows, Leo. I mean, I will see how that goes, but.
Interesting.
I mean, there was a rumor going around this afternoon that they might announce that Windows 8.1 had RTM, so they might announce that today, but I'm hearing a few weeks away.
You don't do that at your quarterly analyst call anyway. That's not
you only do it if you're hiding stuff. Right?
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, you're all getting free wristwatches.
Well, it's like, Windows sales suck, but look, we have a new version of Windows.
Right, and we just RTM'd it today.
So you wouldn't expect them, for instance, today on the phone call to say, oh, and by the way, that reorg, we're going to lay off a bunch of people now.
No.
They'll save that.
No. By the way, so is this in our notes? The
it is.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that was my clever segue.
That was nice.
Okay, so good it fooled even Paul.
I am actually kind of blown away that with this kind of a massive restructuring of the company, that layoffs aren't part of it. And I suspect that part of the reason is they need to sell it on employees, right?
Right.
But I think it's fair to say that Microsoft's a little top heavy, you know, actually maybe a little heavy on the bottom as well. I mean, across the board, and that this is a company that maybe should be made leaner, you know, than it is. Maybe layoffs are appropriate for Microsoft. It has a very dense structure.
Yeah. I mean, they have close to 100,000 employees right now, and they are saying no layoffs were part of the reorg, but they're not saying it will never be part of the reorg, right? Like they're saying right now there are no layoffs. So I haven't heard there are. I mean, I had one guy tip me and say he heard there were layoffs and they were telling people the day they announced the reorg, but I don't believe that's true. Haven't found that's true.
Any other final thoughts? I mean, it's been a couple of weeks, or at least a week and a half, that you've had to think about the reorg. Julie Larson Green, her role,
yeah.
Promotion, demotion, side motion.
You know, I had somebody talk to me about this recently because, you know, there are a lot of people up in arms about, is she a gamer? Is she not a gamer? She's heading up the Xbox now. You know, how could they do that, right? And, you know, I had a guy make an interesting point. He said, you know what, they put her in the right role because if you think about her pedigree, she is a design person. Like, that is kind of what she's known for. She redesigned the ribbon. She was very instrumental in the design on Windows 8. And so when you talk about hardware, design of hardware is a huge thing. So it kind of makes sense that she is in charge of designing the Surface, being in charge of designing maybe future Kinect, more Xbox kind of peripherals, also the phones. That's like having a big hand in that hardware part, right? So if you think about it that way, you could say, yeah, they put her in the correct place. They needed somebody who's very attuned to design because that's what hardware is about.
Is she going to start talking with an English accent? This is Sir Julie Larson Green. Hardware needs to look like it feels and feel like it looks. Did you say, does this say Dave Cutler's back?
Yeah.
What?
So this is another weird thing,
what?
Right? So
do they
What? Dave Cutler, right? We knew he was in the Xbox group for the past year, two years,
he
I believe.
He was the architect of NT, right?
Right.
Yep.
And he then helped, was the key guy, or one of the two key guys in building the operating system for the Xbox One. So now, because of this reorg, he's actually back in Windows in a way, right? Because it's Windows, Windows Phone, and Xbox One all together in one division. So Cutler's back in Windows again.
It's kind of like having Grandpa work on Windows. I don't know. It's
okay. Really... I fully expect him to be open to the press, and we should all be talking to him soon.
Good.
Yeah.
I love Dave Cutler. He's like a legend.
He is a legend.
Paul and I love the book Showstopper.
Me too.
So
it's my favorite book.
Yeah.
Yep.
G. Pascal Zachary.
Mary Jo has a signed copy.
Really?
Of Showstoppers.
Signed by Cutler?
Dave Cutler. Yes.
Wow. Yeah. By the way, anybody who hasn't read this, the story of the making of NT is really good.
This is the stuff.
It's like the soul of the new machine. It's one of those great behind the scenes, you know, embedded reporter story, and it's so good.
Yeah.
Zachary did a great job.
He did a really great job. And, you know, if you want to understand what made Microsoft tick and how Windows was built, that is your book.
But that is ancient history.
It's ancient history. And, you know, Cutler.
It is literally 20 years old this year.
It is. Yep. And, you know, Cutler has supposedly, this is like urban legend at Microsoft. Cutler has in his contract, he never has to talk to the press.
Huh.
Ever.
It's in his contract.
Yeah, because he doesn't like talking to the press.
No. He's an engineer.
In fact, when I got my signed book, in fact, he had somebody else bring it to me because he didn't want to talk to me directly. So that was interesting. Yeah. He's a funny guy.
Does he mistrust the press or what?
Originally, the story goes... that he is so outspoken and outlandish in things he says that the PR team didn't want him talking to
Dave,
the press.
Dave, you won't be talking anymore.
By the way,
because he must have given July 27th the access to this. Go ahead.
July 27th, next week or nine days from now, whatever that is the anniversary of the 20th anniversary of the initial release of Windows NT.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Same year as Jurassic Park.
Kind of fitting.
By the way, you know, people who follow Windows today know that we're in the 9,000s for build numbers. Like,
yeah, right.
The Windows 8.1 Pro Preview is build 9431, and so the initial build of Windows NT, which was actually version 3.1, I just lost the page, is 528. So there have been like 9,000 builds of this code base since the initial release.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
How 9, much of 000. The original code do you think is still in it?
Actually, I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of it was still in there.
I know. I think so, too. Like MinWin, you know, the kind of fixed kernel where they took a lot of the dependencies out. It's still the NT kernel in the center, I believe. Like, that's still the
it's gooey, creamy core.
My thought
exactly.
Some people like to eat the outside first and go for the center, but you know.
Yeah.
Did Cutler ever leave?
I don't know a
did
lot
he
about
stay there? Has he just stayed there 20 years solid?
He has.
He never left.
All kinds of rumors over the years about he left the building, he quit, that they had to beg him to come back, but he never actually, I believe, never actually left the payroll, as far as I know.
I'm going to reread Showstopper.
I know. I want to reread it, too, now that we're
now I want to hear it again. I wonder if it's on Audible. I'm just going to check.
They should have Dave Cutler reading Showstopper.
What does he sound like? He seems like he'd sound gruff.
I bet he barks.
He looks like a Marine. You know, he looks tough.
Oh, yeah. No, he's tough.
Yeah.
Everybody talks about how hard he is, and they're like, "Yeah, he doesn't suffer fools."
Yeah,
well, he must be a smart guy. He's obviously wealthy at this point and does not need to work, and yet continues to do it.
Yep. And he probably still engages in very dangerous hobbies.
What did he do?
He has that kind of, you know, like race car driving,
motorcycles,
and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's another fun fact. A lot of the NT team back in the day, the original team, they were all into race car driving, and they had their own team, right? I forget what the name of the team was. Somebody in the chat room might remember that. But, yeah, they were really into that, and it was a big hobby on the team.
You know what's sad? This book is not on Audible. It is not on Kindle, and it is not in print.
I know.
It's out of print, yep.
Holy moly. I have a copy somewhere. I got to find it. That's sad.
That'd be a great book for Audible.
That would.
I can't believe it's not on Audible. I can't believe it's not Kindle. So you have to buy a used copy if you don't have a copy.
Yeah, that's pretty much how I got it.
I got it when it came out. And, you know, we've had G. Pascal Zachary's been on Twit, and he's a great guy. He's a local guy. I don't know what he's doing these days.
I just saw his byline the other day doing something completely unrelated to tech.
Interesting. That's what happens. Maybe.
Is he like a business writer?
You burn out. It's like
he might be an education writer or something like that. I can't remember. Yeah.
They're saying it's on Kindle, but Amazon doesn't say it's on Kindle. Maybe there's another version.
That sounds, you know, that's interesting. So are you sure it's not on Kindle?
Well, you know, I'm on the Amazon page, and it says, if you would like the publisher to put this on Kindle, but then.
Yeah, it's always a bad sign.
It looks like, but now it looks like there is a Kindle edition. It's just maybe from a different publisher.
Oh.
That's interesting. Oh, you know, maybe it's the paperback. So I was looking at the hardcover.
Right.
And in fact, the hardcover, the paperback is...
okay.
Is still... is it available? Is it in print? I guess the paperback's in print. Yeah. Okay, so it's the hardcover that's not in print. So good news. You can get Showstopper.
Yeah, that's good.
In paperback. I was looking at the hardcover. There's the problem. Or on Kindle. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get it right now because I don't know where my copy is. You've got a signed copy.
I do. That was really awesome. And he inscribed it with a very interesting inscription. I took a picture of the inscription. I'm looking for it now on my SkyDrive. Who knows? My SkyDrive is a mess, but.
Seek it and you shall find.
Yeah, actually, it tells me I already own this book on Kindle, so I guess I honestly got it.
Oh.
That makes sense. Well,
yeah, he said something like, as you would know, being in the press, don't always believe everything you read.
Oh, wow. So he's
without
a cynic.
Any qualifier.
Yeah. Who would know? And yet,
because
person.
he is portrayed in Showstoppers not favorably in the least.
Well, and by the way, in that inscription, I'm sure puts that over the top.
It's interesting.
A much nicer guy than as described.
Yeah.
You know?
Do not believe that I am the Jake portrayed in these covers, but I'll still sign the book. Yeah. How funny!
It's a great book.
Oh, no, it's a must-read.
It's an amazing
story. It's one of, like, a dozen books that if you follow technology, you just have to read.
In fact, if I'm not mistaken, and God help me for bringing up the NSA in this talk, but I believe, I could be wrong, someone could tell me, I believe that the operating system that he was working on a digital that they did not end up making and that led to the development of MT, I believe it was called Prism.
Ah!
Oh, was it really? I mean, because he also was the guy who wrote VMS at Digital too.
VMS,
but he was doing the follow up, and I believe.
Oh wow!
Again, I could be wrong.
That's wild. So the guy who wrote VMS is still at Microsoft.
Yep.
And he's working on
Prism.
Windows
was the name of the project to develop Digital's RISC machine.
Oh, RISC.
And the software was called Mica.
Wow.
Yep.
Look at me with a memory.
Whoa.
Look at you and your memory.
You binged it. I know you binged that. You didn't remember that.
Mary Jo, nobody bings nothing. Biggity Bong is the only guy who bings.
I did look it up after I said it.
I'm kidding you. I just wanted to say bing it again.
And I used Google, if that matters to anybody. But yeah, the operating system was codenamed Micah.
That's cool. And he must have been the father of that as well, correct?
Yeah, that's right. He was the architect of both of those things.
Wow. Yep.
This guy is legendary.
Wow. He is legendary. And he's not just phoning it in, guys. Like, he really did help write the Xbox One operating system with Don Box and David Treadwell, like a whole bunch of guys at Microsoft who've been there forever.
So, by the way, just since we're talking about Cutler, we should also mention that he has forever changed the course of personal computing, because it was him who decided that Microsoft would back what we now call X64, which was an AMD architecture based on x86 that took it to 64 bits. It is, in other words, the architecture behind every single computer sold today. At the time, Intel and Microsoft generally were pushing Itanium for 64-bit computing.
That's right.
And he looked at this stuff and he said, no. He said, this stuff is garbage. We're going to use this AMD thing.
He was so
smart. And he pushed
that
through. And Intel had to adopt it. It was because of this. You know, Intel had to adopt X64. Every single processor they sell right now is
They were lucky they had that Israeli kind of a skunkworks project. And Itanium was a flop. And these guys were working on Pentium, I think. And Core. I'm sorry. They're working on the Core chips.
There you go.
Cutler back. So let's talk about... we're going to take a break in a second. But before we do, a report from the trenches. Office 365 versus Google Apps. Tell me about it.
Yeah, I'll talk about this one quickly.
Not too quickly. I have to go to the bathroom, so take your time.
Oh, okay. You're going to like this one.
I'll be back. I'll be listening on the way.
Okay. So at Microsoft's partner conference in Houston last week, you know, all the sessions were open to everybody for the most part. I mean, anybody could go in. You didn't have to. Even I was allowed to go in as press. Like, I didn't have to check in with anybody or whatever. But I found out this week, because there was accidentally a session posted to the partner site, that there were secret sessions at the partner show too. And one of these secret sessions was about how to compete with Google Apps with Office 365. So this is for Microsoft partners who are out there trying to sell against Google. And it was really interesting to watch the session. I don't know if they ended up pulling this presentation down or not. But
same thing. Do you have a link to it in here? Let me see.
Yeah, I did link to it in my story that I wrote this week about it. So they were talking a lot about, you know, what can we do to help you guys sell? And they said a lot of interesting things like, you know, if you guys lose to anybody on a Google account, how hard it is to do the win backs. And they gave them strategies to try to do win backs. And one comment during the presentation from Microsoft was, and, you know, sometimes if we really need to win it, we just have to buy out the contract, which basically says we're giving it to them for free, just so we can say we won the deal.
That's pretty nice.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't write up a lot of case study wins because I'm always nervous about, like, how did they win this? Like, what was the criteria, right? Yeah. And we can never really find out, because the customer is not really allowed to say a lot of times how a deal was won or lost or whatever. But at the end, they opened it up to partners and said, okay, guys, what do you need from us? And one guy gets up in the session and just says, your SKU system, you know, which is all the different versions of Office 365 you have, is a mess.
Yes.
And I cannot sell this thing, because Google goes in and says, you have two options, this one or this one.
Right.
And I go in there and I've got, like, you can get Plan P with this thing and that and that. And then this costs this much, but if you add this, it costs that much.
Yep.
And, you know, all the other partners are like, yeah, that's a problem. You guys got to fix this. And, you know, their public message is, we are giving you guys flexibility. It's great to have a lot of choice so you can sell the right plan to people. But in the end, simplicity is what wins the sale, right? So it was just a very, very interesting, real session, not the rah-rah stuff. Just, you know, how hard it is in the war in the trenches between Google Apps and Office 365. It gets pretty nasty out there.
So two things. One, that video has been taken down, as expected.
Oh, surprising.
Yeah. And the thing that struck me, because I looked at it and I was checking this out earlier in the week. You know, they basically admitted what I've been saying all along, which is, you know, I do feel that Office 365 is superior to Google Apps. And I feel that for those companies that are going to be paying for one of these services, that Office 365 in general beats out Google Apps. But there is this kind of notion of free, even though Google Apps itself is not actually free anymore, in that, you know, any small business can use custom domains and sign up for Gmail, and you can kind of do this free thing through the Google ecosystem, which doesn't really exist on the Microsoft side, at least not in Office 365. And you know, they kind of said, you know, it is hard. You know, a lot of times we hear from these, especially from small businesses, where they're like, you know, your offerings are kind of expensive. I mean, they're, you know, comparatively speaking, and I think that's a problem too. That combined with the sheer complexity of the offerings, because even, you know, I did an Office 365 presentation a week or so ago, and in researching the SKUs, because it's hard to remember how many there are and what they are, you know, what the differences are. I basically came at some point, I finally realized, like, I can't cover all of these. There's too many of them. Like, it's, I have to kind of just generalize this. It is crazy how much choice there is there.
Yeah. There's pluses and minuses to that, right? Like when you go into a new account, and they talked about this too. They're like, we have to beat them going into an account. If they go in first and then we follow them and try to unseat them, it's tough. But if we go in first, we have a better chance of winning because we can talk about value instead of price. And they talked about those kind of strategies.
There's something on the Microsoft side where they can go into a business and say, look, you know, you have, you know, X number of employees, and some of them can get by with just web-based access to email, you know, documents and whatever. And those people can get by really cheaply. Some people need full office. Some people might need Project or Visio or some of the advanced things. And there are different pricing structures for each of those things. And we offer those as a choice. And so it's kind of a strange deal where it's an advantage for Google to be able to say, we have two things. Yeah. But it's also an advantage for Microsoft to be able to say, we can better meet your needs if your needs are complex. And it's not that one or the other is the better approach. It's that both approaches have their advantages.
Yep. Let's take the teeny weeny. Oh, wait a minute.
Earnings just came out.
Uh-oh.
How dare they? Oh, we
How dare they? Windows.
You know, we came so close to getting out of the show before the earnings call. Dang it.
I know.
Tell you what, let's take a break. We'll get the earnings. I'll give you guys a chance to look at the report. Yeah. And when we come back.
Can you tell me where you're seeing that?
Microsoft.com/MSFT.
But first, a word from Shutterstock. Shutterstock.com is the place to go if you need images, gorgeous vector graphics, video clips, illustrations, stock photos. I have a Shutterstock subscription because, for a couple of reasons. One is for my blog, you know this. When you do a blog post, you absolutely have to put an image with it. I don't know why, but it makes the post look better. It sings. And I don't have Paul Thurrott's Photoshop skills, so I've got to get something that really works. And so Shutterstock, for me, this is great. I have a subscription. You can also buy images and packages and so forth. But before you even do that, just go to Shutterstock.com and create an account. You don't even need to give them a credit card. You could just create the account and start browsing around. You can look by categories. So, you know, they have all sorts of categories from abstract art to vintage art. You can narrow it down, which is awfully cool. They have a spectrum tool by color and so forth. But you can also search by keywords. Let's say happy executive. So I should be able to find one of those or two. Happy. So I'm searching for executives, but then you can qualify it with emotions, colors. It's really a neat search tool. Hey, there's a happy executive. she's just jolly. Jolly, jolly. Oh, but here's not a happy executive. That's a mad executive. Why is it all the women are happy and all the men are? Well, he's happy. Odd, but happy. Oh, there you go. There's Steve Ballmer right there. Happy. He's a happy executive. So, play around with it. When you sign up for a free account, you can create a light box, which it allows you to save images and share them with others and so forth. The light box is handy because You could get, you know, if you're, say, designing a page or a graphic or a menu or something, you can pull images up, throw them in the light box. But it's also a good way to save inspirational images, images that you go, wow, this is great. Or, here's, by the way, 1.4 million videos, royalty-free, 26 million photos. And every week they add, every day they add 10,000 new images. And the quality on these is spectacular. That's because they vet each image. Many contributors, professional photographers and artists, they look at each image individually for content and quality before adding it. You could choose individual image packs or get a monthly subscription for the best deal. I have the 25 images a day subscription, which is great. And even greater because now I can get you 30% off when you use our offer code Windows 7, Windows 7, not named after the operating system, but in fact after the month of July, the seventh month. You can get 30% off on your new account. That's a great deal. Windows 7, Shutterstock.com. We thank them for their support of Windows Weekly. Mary Jo Foley, Paul Thurrott. They've had time to digest their lovely luncheon of Microsoft numbers. And now we'll report. You want to IRP up?
How are we going to do this?
Well, you could do a dramatic reading, but I think just tell us.
Well, the biggest thing that stands out to both of us is regarding Surface RT, I would think.
There's numbers on RT?
No.
Sort of.
Sort of, yeah.
Some numbers, yeah.
What?
Go ahead, Paul. You've already tweeted it out.
Microsoft has reported an almost $1 billion charge related to Surface RT inventory adjustments. $900 million. Meaning they made too many and couldn't sell them, and now they're going to...
They're bulldozing them into a pit.
Yep.
No, they're giving them away, right? All these
that's a big charge. $1 billion?
Yeah.
Yep.
How many did they make? Did they say?
That's what we don't know. Yeah. I saw so many crazy rumors about how many they made, and you know...
Mary Jo, you should have bought more.
I should have bought more than one.
$500 a whack. No. It's about 1.8 million of them.
Holy... Yeah.
Isn't it?
I'm curious how they really went wrong in their channel figuring on the Surface RT. I'm curious because they always talk about, you know, their visibility into the pipeline and channel inventory, yep. And they have a good sense of where demand's going to come from. So this is really
this was a new product that seemingly excited about for some reason. But I think it suffered from bad word of mouth. This is like a movie that opens poorly that people just, you know, I think it's bad word of mouth.
Yeah.
And I could never find this now, but I had written this thing some months ago where I sort of described, like, you know, how differently could things have been if they had launched Surface Pro that day instead of Surface RT and given the world a Windows tablet that was compatible with everything that they already had, you know, that maybe that would have made a difference. And then given people a chance to get into kind of the more pure Metro experience a little further down the line. I mean, in some way, I'm just surprised it's so explicit because we knew they were dumping these things, right? From TechEd to Build to WPC to, you know, probably to MGX. I mean, they're giving these things away, essentially. And, you know, no one was blind to that. I'm just kind of surprised they're so explicit. Like, it's like we're washing our hands of this thing. I mean, they're doing this right up front. It almost completely obviates, in fact, more than completely obviates the related, $782 million of previously deferred revenue related to the Office upgrade offer. And so Surface RT has completely wiped out all of the benefits to Office pre-sales. You know, that's how big that is.
Wow.
But, that said. Windows numbers aren't as bad as some have feared.
They're not that horrible. Yeah.
So they're breaking down these numbers. That's good.
Yeah.
What are the Windows numbers?
Where are the Windows numbers here?
Well, right. So I haven't actually seen the... Right, you mean like the revenue?
The breakout. So I'm looking for the breakout. I can't find it.
All right.
We can say this, though. Let's see. How do we say it? Windows division revenue was up 6% for the fourth quarter, meaning year over year, and 5% for the full year. So that's actually pretty amazing. That includes Windows upgrade offer revenue deferrals, meaning pre-sales of Windows 8, right? If you exclude that, I believe, if I'm reading this correctly, then their revenues in the Windows division decreased 6% in the fourth quarter year over year, which again is actually isn't horrible, and 1% for the full year. So if you look at, like, say, I guess it would be July 2012 through June 2013, which is like the launch year for Windows 8, revenues declined 1%. And frankly, given the conditions in the PC market, I actually think that's great. You know, given as poorly as we see the launch of Windows 8 and as poorly as is absolutely a fact the PC market is doing, their revenues in this year have only gone down 1%. That's pretty good.
Yeah, that is pretty good,
I think.
Yeah. Back to the Surface RT. It sounds like that that inventory charge is due to the pricing change announced this week. So that was the $150 off every Surface RT.
Interesting.
So that includes finished goods, parts, accessories, all that. Hmm. So that's what they're attributing that right down to.
Hmm. Yeah, Windows revenues in the month were $5.7 billion, meaning it's still the second biggest business in Microsoft. 6.3 for business, which is the Office division.
Office is bigger than Windows. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, it has been for a while. Mm-hmm. And server and tools came in at just about $5 billion even, so a little smaller than Windows.
So they're taking a $1 billion charge on a $350 RT sale. Does that mean they're selling below cost? It does.
Well, yeah, now they are.
Because they didn't
book
the profit for those until they're sold. Right. So that means they're selling considerably below cost or expect to sell.
So in other words, this suggests that they paid, that they were selling them for what they paid for, essentially, I would imagine, or a bit more.
Yeah. So you take a charge of $150 per unit sold.
Yep.
And that means they still expect to sell a lot of units. I guess it's better selling them at $350 than putting them in a landfill.
Yep.
But they might even have to go lower.
Online services lost less.
Okay, so it was what, $270 million last quarter?
It was $480 million a year ago.
Okay.
$262 this year.
Hey! It's looking good. Better. Only a little more than a quarter of a billion dollars.
Math, they're doing great. They're doing great.
You're doing awesome. Yeah, that's better. And, you know, like we said, that is going to change once they figure out their reporting structure, because we probably won't see online services.
We're not going to see this broken.
I mean, honestly, across their five divisions, income and revenues are up in every single one of them. And in the cases where we're talking about losses, from a profit perspective, the losses are less. And that's online services, actually. So a year ago, entertainment and devices actually posted a small loss. This year, they posted a small gain. I mean, honestly, roughly speaking, they're year over year. This is
they're making money.
Oh, they're making a lot
when
of money.
When you make $50 billion saying, hey, we're going to take a $1 billion write-off, isn't that bad?
Well, by the way, so a year ago in that quarter, Microsoft made revenues of $17.4 billion. In this previous quarter, they made $20.5 billion.
Wow.
So that's a significant...
That's revenue, not profit.
Revenue. Yeah. Profits, $7.6 billion, up from $6.3 billion a year ago.
That sounds like a pretty good growth year over year.
Yep.
That sounds okay.
I would say so.
Just think how well it would have done if RT had been a hit.
Hey!
The word $1 billion charge reminds me of Xbox. Didn't they take $1 billion?
Yes. Yeah, $1.1
Yeah, for the Red Ring problem. Mm-hmm. And then what was the write-off for Overture that they took? It was $1 billion. They like taking $1 billion write-offs. What was the write-off for Overture?
Oh, I think it was
$1 billion.
You just want to get that stuff out of the way.
So you got $1 billion businesses and you got $1 billion losses. But there was more. As long as there's more $1 billion businesses than $1 billion losses, not bad.
They're probably going to get whacked though, because analysts didn't know about this Surface RT thing. Right?
Not at all.
No, that's I cannot believe
that's out of left field.
Stated that so explicitly.
I think they had to. This is a problem of being publicly held.
Well, you know what, though? In the past, I feel like they would have massaged that in over quarters. You know, that they would have...
Yeah, they didn't do it with Overture either, right? Remember? They just pulled the Band-Aid right off.
I know, but so was this like a recent thing that they're just being more transparent or something? I don't know. This is not the way they there's no doubt that there was financial massaging going on at this company for many, many years. Like it's like that has stopped. God, I miss those days.
Oh, man. You're watching Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. We thought we'd have time to take questions from the audience, but of course, the quarterly results have taken all of that time. But that's okay, because it's nice that we could do that.
Now I'm all messed up, Leo. I don't want to talk about anything else. Now I want to write about their earnings.
Okay, we're done.
We have to do our picks.
We can't go without a beer pick, especially this one.
No.
But first, let's start with our tip of the week. Just do it quickly, Paul, and then you can go blog. Or,
all right, so,
or as Aaron Sorkin would said, you could put your jammies on, go to the basement, and write a blog.
Nice. Are you enjoying that the newsroom is
god,
back, Leo?
It's god-awful. God, I couldn't finish it. I couldn't even watch one episode. And again,
I don't think it's preachy enough, Leo.
Yeah, the most preachy show ever. And then every, you know, it's like he has to get the line about bloggers and their jammies in every single show.
I want to live in a world where everyone is that smart and dedicated. Oh, I want it to be like that. You know what I mean? It's not. And that's what drives me crazy. Anyway. I don't believe that. Anyway, let's not get off of the sidetrack.
Yeah, because you're never going to get your blog, and your jammies are waiting.
I got to get my jammies to my blog. So I'll rant about the news later. I wrote about system recovery this week in Windows 8, and because a lot of people have noticed that the system image backup tool from previous versions of Windows is gone all of a sudden in Windows 8.1. Now, I actually believe it's going to make a comeback in the sense that I think they'll make it available as a download or at least put it on the disk or whatever, because the reason it was in Windows 8 is because people who upgraded from Windows 7 would need that tool to access the information that was in the backups. That situation still exists today, so I'm a little surprised. It's not in the preview, but I suspect it will make a comeback. But I did use this opportunity to write about sort of the new, they're not new to 8.1, but some of them were improved in 8.1, but the new style system recovery tools that first debuted in Windows 8 and in some cases have been, revved for 8.1. This is the old school people who like the old way of doing things and, you know, are suspicious of the new way of doing things. But, you know, I think that the recovery tools in Windows 8 are comparable and or better to the recovery tools that you would see in such things as like Android or the iPad or whatever. And that's the point, that it's not this giant monolithic backup where you have to be connected to an external hard drive or a NAS or something and pumping bits across the wire every single night to make sure you have the latest version of your system image or whatever, which is the way some people like to do things. And so there's a new way of doing things in Windows 8. 8.1, again, has some improvements. But I think this is one of those things where people, you know, some people are always going to want to do it the old way. I get that. They're also not very patient with those of us who are happy enough to move on, you know. And so in Windows 8, we have things like PC Reset and PC Refresh. And I used these tools very recently. Actually, I blew away virtually everything I have here. And I'm still amazed by how quick it is that you can go back to a factory fresh Windows 8 system. And then with the way the world's going, you know, there aren't a lot of heavy Windows applications that I'm installing off of disk anymore. A lot of the things that I use, I install online. It's not a big deal. I synchronize all my data through SkyDrive or SkyDrive Pro. I mean, I really think that in this new way of doing things that Windows 8 is the first step to system image backup in many ways just doesn't have a place going forward. But anyway, that's the discussion. So you can look at that on my blog.
God, I just love system image backup. Fortunately, there are plenty of third-party solutions. It's not.
That's what people are talking about. You know, RxSoft has got this, and these guys have got that.
I never used the Microsoft solution.
Yeah, all right, sure.
It was nice that it was in there.
And people will do things like they have Home Server or Windows Server Essentials, and these things, by virtue of the fact that you're connected to your home network or your work network, will sit there and do these backups over the wire, and it all happens automatically. And I have many success stories from people who have recovered systems this way, and it works, you know. But that's like a traditional PC scenario.
Right.
I mean, these devices that we're talking about aren't necessarily going to be ever sitting on a wire connected to anything, and or you're not going to plug in a hard drive into a backup. It's not the way things work. We do these sync scenarios over the internet to cloud services. It's a different world. And you wouldn't expect an iPad to have the same heavy system image tools that your PC does, and I don't think we should expect these devices to either. And I know that that's where we're heading.
That's the beauty of them. They don't need them.
Yeah. So But it's a break from the past. And this is that tradition thing I was talking about. Yeah. People sometimes forget with the why of what they're doing, and all they can think is it's not the same. And I think it freaks some people out. Okay. And then software pick. I'm sorry?
Moving on.
What happened?
Moving on.
Oh, sorry.
Enough of this.
I thought you said Lumia. I got excited there for that.
Lumia. I just have to say Lumia. And Paul goes, what?
After approximately 17 straight weeks of having Windows Phone picks, my software pick this week is actually for iOS. Microsoft surprised me and I think many other people by releasing the curiously named OWA in separate versions for iPad and for iPhone. And the iPhone version works on iPod Touch as well. So OWA, in Microsoft parlance, stands for Outlook Web Access, or Outlook Web App in more recent days. What it is the Outlook client for iOS, but only for Office 365. So if you have an Office 365 business account of any kind, small business premium, enterprise, whatever, you can download this app, sign in with your Office 365 credentials. It makes you use an app PIN because with a native app, there's no way to determine that the underlying OS is requiring a PIN, so they can't do that kind of policy-based requirement like you would get with EAS. But it's a full Outlook experience, like a full Outlook offline experience. And so you get this Windows Phone-looking email client, which I think is kind of amazing. You get the people contacts management, and you get your calendar all inside of this one native app. And so for people who are using iOS, it's sort of like the experience you get on Windows Phone, although on Windows Phone, those things are all actually separate apps, and of course they work with other email sources as well. But it's an interesting expansion of their collection of mobile apps for other platforms. And so if you're using iOS in particular, you now have an amazing range of Microsoft mobile apps that work both with their public cloud, consumer-oriented services like Outlook.com and SkyDrive and OneNote and all that stuff. But you also have these apps that work with Office 365, the business versions, including OneNote, SkyDrive Pro. There's a SharePoint newsfeed app. There's a Link app. There's all kinds of stuff. It's really kind of amazing. And now with Office appearing on iPhone, being Word, Excel, PowerPoint, now you have Outlook as well. I mean, you're kind of getting a full Microsoft experience on an iPad or an iPhone these days, and that is a significant change. And that it has the Windows Phone look and feel, I love personally. Some people might be freaked by that a little bit. There's tiles in there and, Windows Phone style typography, but it's a great little app. And it's a nice little bit of Microsoft DNA that you can put on your phone, like that alien from Prometheus or whatever. But it's a really strange thing.
Does this mean that Office for iPad is imminent? Or is this a stopgap measure?
It hasn't happened yet. No, I think you're going to see not full Office. I think you're going to see at least Office Mobile soon, as they did on iPhone.
Yeah.
Mobile versions of those apps. And when you combine it with a pretty full-featured version of OneNote, and then all of those other apps I mentioned, including some I probably missed, you get like the full Microsoft experience on these Apple devices now. It's kind of crazy.
It's a bummer because I can't use it. I have an Office 365 subscription, but it says I can't use it.
It's only for the business
version. So I have an Outlook.com Microsoft login.
But Outlook.com, so there are a couple of options there. Obviously, you can use the Apple apps to hit your contacts, mail, calendar, and all that. But Microsoft does make, I believe, on iOS, don't they make an Outlook.com client, or is that only an Android?
I don't know.
They do. I could be wrong.
So this isn't subscription that I have. You have to have the business subscription.
It has to be a business version, yeah.
Right.
And I'm hearing from people who have Exchange on-prem, for example. They're like, I don't understand why I can't access this. And right now it's a perk of the business versions of Office 365. I wouldn't be surprised.
And this doesn't count as one of your five installs.
No.
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 No, no, no,
no. No, just a perk.
Just a perk. Just a freebie. Just a little something-something.
Nice.
What?
It's nice.
It is nice. It's very nice. I would love to use
nice.
It. It's nice. Enterprise pick of the week from Mary Jo Foley.
Yeah, my enterprise pick of the week is a little bit hard to explain, but let me give it a try. It's Windows Azure Desktop Hosting Licensing changes. I can't even say it right. So I'll tell you why this matters first. That might be the best way to go at this. So up until now, if you wanted to run remote desktop services from Microsoft on a Windows Azure virtual machine, you couldn't, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could run two sessions on an Azure VM that way, but that was what you were stopped at. And so that's why a lot of people like Citrix and other hosting companies and larger enterprises couldn't have hosted desktop running on an Azure VM. But now you can as of July 1st because Microsoft changed the licensing terms. And you still have to jump through a lot of hoops and buy some new kinds of client licenses to do this and all. But it's very interesting for companies who want to do things like have the Windows desktop available to users as a hosted service. You can do this now. You can't do it right on top of, you can't put Windows desktop on Azure in a VM. You still cannot do that. But you can now, through Windows Server on an Azure VM, host the desktop. So it sounds very convoluted, but it lets hosters do some pretty interesting things. Like in a session at the partner show this week, one Microsoft official said to the hosters in the room, "Hey, you know, you want to differentiate yourself from Microsoft with Office 365? You could run Link and have it run on someone's iPad by doing this whole crazy RDS on Azure VM thing." So it's a way that people are going to be able to have full desktop access on different devices, not just on Windows devices. But it's only for people who are really largest enterprises or hosters. But still, very, very interesting they changed these licensing terms.
Right. And your code name of the week?
My code name of the week is something called InfoNav, InfoNav. It's short for InfoNavigator, which was a secret project Microsoft was working on for the past couple of years. It was actually funded by Bill Gates's office. It was like so high priority. It was a Bill Gates thing. And what it is a natural language query engine. It's one of the things that's built into the Power BI service that Microsoft recently announced that lets you type into a browser or something like, show me all the top classic songs in the past decade and know what you meant and how to, you know, kind of what songs, what classic means. This is the technology that's embedded inside there that does it. And it was developed together by the Bing team, Microsoft Research team, and the SQL Server team. They all worked on this together. And what's really interesting to me about this is it's not known as InfoNav now. It's now known as Q&A inside of the Power BI tool. But Steve Ballmer called out the word InfoNav in his reorg memo. He said, we've got all these new tools coming with Bing, Excel, and InfoNav that are going to be really interesting in the new Microsoft going forward. So that makes me think InfoNav probably isn't only going to be for like SharePoint geeks and Power BI geeks. It's going to also be showing up probably in some other Microsoft services that we don't know about yet. Mm. So keep your ears peeled on InfoNav.
I shall. And now, if you thought Hawaiian pizza was disgusting, you're going to love Hawaiian beer.
I love Hawaiian pizza. You don't like Hawaiian pizza.
No, I don't. Paul, what's your position on the Canadian bacon?
That is the Holy Alliance, and I will have nothing to do with that.
Yeah, me too.
I love pineapple, and I love pizza.
They don't go together, though.
I love pineapple on pizza.
I think it's a girl thing. I never saw a guy that likes ham and pineapple on pizza.
Okay.
Well, pineapple shouldn't be heated in any way.
I know. Wait a minute. Actually, that's not true.
No, you like it on some things.
We went to a Brazilian steak restaurant in San Francisco that had grilled.
Yeah. No, that's different.
Pineapple with cinnamon
grilled
on it.
Pineapple.
Ooh.
That was fantastic.
Ooh.
Yep. So, yeah. So
okay, all the guys in the chat room who happen to like this crap are
saying that. I'm not going to admit that.
Are saying, no, they're saying, what are you, nuts?
Good. So, yeah, my beer pick is called the Flying Dog Pineapple Saison.
Mmm.
It's a Saison style beer or a kind of like a bubble gum-ish flavored kind of fun. That's what Saisons are, kind of. They have that bubble gum flavor, which is weird, but tasty. And this one, really, you smell it, and it's like, wow, I can smell the pineapple. And you can kind of taste it a little bit, too. And it's from the Flying Dog Brewery in Maryland. I really like it. I think it's a really good summer beer because it's just got that like little pineapple hint and very fun and light. Good beer for a day like today in New York when it's 98.
Yeah, I heard it's pretty hot out there.
Oh, it's so hot here. It's so
You know what? You didn't even break a sweat. I'm so impressed, Mary Jo.
I think I did.
You didn't say anything. You were just a trooper. Yeah. Trooper. So, Paul would have been bitching.
And... I've got an air conditioner
and a fan hitting me. I'm in the middle of like this weird tropical storm thing.
I know.
He's got a Sharknado in his office.
I have like icicles coming out of my nose.
Ah, my friends, we have come to the end of a fabulous edition of Windows Weekly. Thank you, Paul Thurrott, Windows Supersite, winsupersite.com. And in scant minutes after he files his quarterly earnings blog post, he will finish his book, which you can watch. Can you watch it in real time at windowsphonebook.com?
Not in real time, but
that'd be fun.
Maybe the next book. I'll put a camera on the keyboard.
Yeah, I did that.
I think I just saw him type the word Windows.
But now on the site, if I go to the site, is this in chronological order? So like finished maps and location point two?
Yep.
Okay, so as soon as you see the next post, folks, it is done.
Done is a relative term, of course.
No book is ever done.
Yeah.
What to do?
Good going. WinSupersite.com and, of course, WindowsPhoneBook.com. Mary Jo Foley writes about Microsoft. I was just reading your bio. I never read your bio on your website. Frequent contributor to television and radio shows as well as podcasts, Mary Jo Foley writes all about Microsoft for ZDNet at allaboutmicrosoft.com and is a mighty fine gal.
Aw, thanks, Leo.
We do Windows.
I have a Leo stamp of approval.
Mighty fine. Oh, I love this show. Are you kidding? I hate Windows, but I love you guys.
We'll win you
over. That's all I ever wanted, Leo.
I can't wait though. That's all I cared about. I got to say. No, I use my Acer a lot, actually. That's kind of my home computer. It's a. I like it. I like the form factor. Anyway, you can watch us do this thing live, roughly 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time. 1900 UTC every Thursday on twit.tv. On-demand audio and video also made available after the fact at twit.tv/WW for Windows Weekly. And, of course, wherever finer podcasts are aggregated and delivered directly to your device, such as the Zune Store, as an example. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Mary Jo. See you next week on Windows Weekly.